Chapter 26. In the echoing silence, Arla takes a breath, another. She pulls her helmet off, letting it clatter to the ground, and wipes away the streak of a bloody nose. She's shaking, John thinks, watching her, but he doesn't try to approach, doesn't offer anything. Then, deliberate, Arla lets a stun grenade drop down into her palm from where it was hidden under the edge of her gauntlet, tosses it aside, and the curve of her mouth is all disgust. "A coward to the end," she says, and it rasps loud in the hush of the shrine. "I might have respected him a little more if he had actually been going for a knife." Arla did know what Tor was doing, John thinks, and snorts. He makes a quick scan of the monument, checking that none of the Death Watch soldiers are going to get up, and steps around the edge of the memorial itself to offer Hoodoo a hand. "We need to leave before reinforcements arrive," he says quietly. "Are you going to be all right?" Hoodoo nods, letting John pull him to his feet, and offers his calm back. "My clan is coming," he says. "The Death Watch had a treaty with us that declared the memorial neutral ground, and he broke that. None of us will take kindly to that." John remembers Hoodoo's words about not letting harm come to anyone here to pay respects, and he pauses, considers the man's injuries, the way Ursa had stepped between him and Tor when they arrived, and says quietly, "Thank you for stepping in to defend the Countess." Hoodoo smiles ruefully. "Thanks for finishing what I tried to start," he returns, and grips John's vambrace. "Mareel really married a Jedi?" There's no hostility in his face, and John inclines his head, returns the grip briefly before he pulls back. "Freely," he says quietly, and Hoodoo snorts. "I should have assumed the moment Tor said otherwise," he allows, pauses, and then glances at where Arla is crouched beside Tor's body. "Clan Shiv followed House Vizsla because of the Darksaber. If you've taken it, the clan head needs to know." John doesn't say that it's a Jedi relic, belongs in Jedi hands. The settled hum of the Darksaber at his side is proof enough of that for anyone who can feel it. "I took it for Jaster," he says, which is close enough to the truth, leaving out all the parts that might offend a Mandalorian. Hoodoo's smile is crooked. "Maybe we can finally chase the Death Watch off Harsley then. It's been long overdue," he says, and steps aside. Pauses for a long second, and then offers, more quietly, "Nice shot, Fett." Arla doesn't look over, but she rises to her feet, collects her helmet with a mechanical sort of efficiency. "Thanks," she says, and closes her eyes for a long second, then pulls the helmet back on brusquely. "My mother was the first one who taught me. She was a hell of a shot." "As expected of Clan Fett," Hoodoo says, and presses his fist to his breastplate. "Safe flight." "Good fighting," Arla returns, and tips her head at John. He follows readily, falling in beside her, and she leads him out of the memorial, then down the slope a short ways before she says, with a harsh edge that isn't reflected in the tangled knot of her emotions, "I know Tor was holding the Darksaber, so I should have let you at least face him." John shakes his head once, eyes on the familiar shape of Arla's ship as it approaches. "It was your fight to have." He pauses, and then asks quietly, "Did it help?" Arla's breath is ragged, even over the helmet speakers. "No," she says, raw. Stops, then takes a breath and says, "I thought it would feel good, but he couldn't even give me that." "One action doesn't fix 1,000 actions," John doesn't say. "By doing so, you saved all the other children he was planning to take," he offers, soft. There's a pause, long seconds as the ship slides down, ramp opening. "That part does feel good," Arla allows finally, and there's an edge of humor in her voice, something besides grief. "We'll still have to warn them, but it was Tor's pet project, and now he won't ever have any ever again." She ignites her jetpack, arrowing up for the belly of the ship, and John leaps after her, one long jump carried by the force. They touch down at the same time, and Ursa hits the switch to close the ramp, even as the ship hurtles forward, aiming for the edge of the atmosphere. "Are you all right?" Ursa asks, and Arla takes a breath, drops a hand on her shoulder as she passes, and squeezes gently. "Everything's over with," she promises, and then scales the ladder up to the cockpit, dropping the hatch behind herself. For a moment, Ursa wavers, looking like she doesn't know what to do, but when she glances at him, John shakes his head. "We should give them time," he says quietly. "They're the last of their family because of Tor, and now he's dead." Ursa takes a breath, but nods, and after a second, she sinks down on one of the benches, pulling her helmet off. "The Shiv Guard?" she asks. John sits down beside her, settling the darksaber in his lap. He needs to meditate at some point, and it will be good for the darksaber, too, to feel that after so long. It might help it be a little less loud. He's fine. His clan was coming to help him. With a huff, Ursa leans back against the wall, pulling one foot up to brace it on the bench. "They'll spread word that Jaster's husband took the darksaber," she says, and hesitates. Curls her hands against her armor, eyes on her helmet, and says after a long second, "If Clan Ren swears loyalty to the Mandalore, too, that will help more people recognize him. We've followed House Vizsla for so long that it has to mean something that we're changing our allegiance. It won't be easy for some people to accept," and John studies her for a moment. "You're willing to go that far?" he asks. Ursa closes her eyes. "I don't want my clan to be at risk like that," she says. "As cannon fodder, just because we're easily used. The house we're sworn to has an obligation to protect us, and fight with us, and provide for us, in return for the service we give them. Tor never did that." She hesitates, and then says, "Being clan head means I have to put my clan's safety first, before anything else. Tor set us up to be oathbreakers." She glances up, meeting John's eyes. "I don't know how it is for Jedi, but to a Mandalorian, someone who would betray an offer of hospitality, and all of the oaths of peace that come with that, is Darmanda, soulless, without identity as a Mandalorian. They can be killed on sight, without repercussion. Tor would have made my entire family Darmanda as collateral damage, without a moment's hesitation." John might have little concept of Mandalorian hospitality rules, but he understands protectiveness over a group, knows the weight of responsibility. Reaching out, he rests light fingertips on the curve of Ursa's helmet and says quietly, "Jaster will keep your people safe, even when times are hard." Ursa's smile is crooked, and she breathes out, rubbing her palm over her face. "I believe that," she says. "My mother hated him, and every time she encountered him on the battlefield, she would spend days swearing and seething, but she respected him too. Given what Tor did, I don't think she would resent me this choice." A pause, and she brushes her fingers over her helmet, eyes on the golden medal. "Even if she did," she says, quiet, "I think I would still make this choice. Things have shifted, and I need to keep my family safe. And I want us to be a clan with honor, strong, but respected, like Jaster. We wouldn't have that if we kept following the Death Watch." "Impressive," Jaster called Ursa, and John smiles a little, well able to see it too. Jaster has a good eye for people, a good sense of when and how to offer them a different path. "I'm not my husband," he says, soft, "but I think he'll be overjoyed to offer Clan Ren a place at his side." "I hope so," Ursa says, but she's smiling, and this time there's no shadow to it. "My ancestors made the honorable choice to follow Revan when he became Mandalore. He made us strong and gave us honor. I think this choice will be the same." John can't see shatter points, hasn't taken the long stretch of time needed to meditate, to filter himself down until that ability becomes clear. But this might be a shatter point, he thinks. Trust broken, changing the future. Offering Clan Ren and all the clans following Tor a new way forward, if they simply choose to take it. Jaster is a Shatterpoint, and John still wholly believes that. It makes sense, then, that he would draw other breaks in the future towards him, changing the universe just with his existence. One more reason, John thinks with a small smile, to spend his life protecting Jaster as best he can. I think it will too, he offers, and Ursa tips her head back against the bulkhead, tension easing from her, relief settling in. She doesn't say anything else, but the silence between them is easy, steady, companionable, and John is more than happy to let it rest. What? Jaster asks, startled, and turns away from his target practice to level a look at Miles. Miles grimaces, but he tips his head in confirmation. A Jedi ship is requesting permission to land, he says. Not the Council's envoy. I think it's Masters Dyeth and Dooku from the wedding. Jaster had known they departed, but he'd thought it was with knowledge that their task was over, and there wasn't any need for them to stay. To have them return so soon, and in enough of a hurry that they didn't even attempt to give a warning, is surprising. A threat? He asks, frowning. I have no idea. Miles grimaces, but when Jaster waves the targets off and slings his blaster rifle over his shoulder, turning towards the compound, Miles falls in beside him without hesitation. Should I tell the guards to confirm? Jaster frowns faintly, weighing the options. Nico and Dooku had seemed perfectly amiable once the matter of John's willingness to marry was cleared up, and Jaster hadn't sensed any hostility from them. It's possible that they're returning to bolster Windu's presence in negotiations on behalf of the Council, but neither one of them had struck Jaster as the type to follow orders well. And, too, it would be redundant for the Council to send Windu at all if two more senior Jedi were already available. Windu looked young over the comm. At the lower limits of who can be a master, Jaster assumes. A man like Dooku would carry more authority if they sent him. Let them through, he says after a moment, and turns toward the landing area. Have them put down near our ships. Miles relays the message, then slants a glance at Jaster. Trouble? Aren't you the one with the instincts attuned to the universe's shifts? Jaster asks, raising a brow. I think I should be asking you that. With a snort, Miles thumps him lightly on the vambrace. Ask your new husband, not me. I just know that your children are giving me ulcers, and that's more than enough. I don't need to have any idea about the rest of the universe. Jaster chuckles, allowing that. I thought after we got Arla settled into life with us, the number of ulcers would go down, he muses. Clearly, I underestimated her and Jango. You adopted two children from Clan Fett and expected them not to turn your hair gray all at once? Miles asks, dry. He pauses at the sight of a sleek cruiser just dropping through the clouds, bearing the symbol of the Jedi Order on its nose, and then makes a sound of quiet amusement. I guess that's something we should get used to. Assuming it works out in our favor. Jaster comes to a halt, watching the ship settle, and it's a strange thought that if everything goes as he hopes, there might be another main Jedi temple in Mandalorian space. The locations he and Miles settled on are all significant in Mandalorian history, drawn on Riven and Tare's influence in equal parts, and having Fae as Tare's student throw her weight behind the idea will help quite a lot with the Mandalorian people accepting the idea. It won't be simple, but just the threat of a Mandalore suddenly gaining a wide swath of influence over the Jedi Order will be enough to make the Senate sit up and take notice. Supreme Chancellor Kaj is a canny woman. She'll recognize the threat if Jaster makes it clear he's serious and move quickly to mitigate his control over the Order. The best way to do so is to strengthen the Republic's ties to Mandalore, and that comes with recognizing Jaster as the leader of his people. It will be enough to end the war, or at least to ease it. It has to be. With a creak, the cruiser's ramp thumps down as the engines go silent, and a moment later, Nico descends, grim-faced, missing the outer robe he was wearing when he left. His gaze immediately goes to Jaster, and he bows his head, makes to fold his hands into his sleeves, and pauses, stymied by his lack of robe. Unsettled, Jaster thinks, watching his face. He's unsettled, and something very close to angry. not at all what Jaster would have expected, given how amiable and easygoing he seemed at the wedding. "Master Dyeth," he says politely, stepping forward. "I'll admit, I didn't expect you would grace us with your presence again so soon. Is everything all right?" Nico grimaces, but steps off the ramp to meet them. "Forgive us the sudden return, Mandalore," he says, "but I had hoped that Master Fay was still in residence. As of 2 hours ago, she was, though I can't promise that something hasn't changed," Jaster says, frowning, and glances up the ramp as more footsteps approach, Jedi light across the metal, but heavier than normal. And Dooku appears at the top of the ramp, expression just as grim as Nico's, formerly neat dark hair and beard ruffled like he hasn't bothered to set them in order. Under his arm, wrapped in Nico's robe, is a Paladuvan girl, not more than 15, with fire brown hair and chalk pale skin that makes the bruises on her face stand out starkly. She's dressed like a Jedi, but the ripped robes are too big on her thin frame, and she looks like she's been crying. No wonder, Jaster thinks grimly, they requested immediate clearance to land with a child who needs help. "Master Dooku," he says evenly, and the way the girl flinches, glances up quickly at the sound of his voice, is oddly familiar. "Be welcome in these lands as long as you'd like. I'll have someone fetch Master Fey immediately." "There's no need, Mandalore," Dooku says, and helps the girl, who's limping visibly, down onto the packed earth. She already knows she's needed and is on her way. "Mandalore Jaster Mareel, this is Padawan Aura Sing. She was abducted by pirates, but blessedly has been returned to us." Going by the fury in Nico's eyes, the pirates were likely given very little choice in the matter of returning her. Jaster can't say he particularly cares. "Mandalore," Aura says, her voice a rasp. She sounds like she's been screaming, and something in Jaster's chest turns over. He knows, intellectually, that Jedi children are a favorite of those who collect living beings or slavers who trade in dangerous sentience. But Aura is a child, and to think of Arla at her age, taken by pirates with no scruples and no restraint, makes Jaster feel the need to do violence. "Padawan Sing," Jaster says instead, pitched gentle. "You will be safe here. My men will make sure of it. Please, rest easy and recover well." Aura's expression twists, and she ducks her head, nods. Before she can respond, though, a pale figure passes right by Jaster without so much as a glance back, and Fey says briskly, "Master Dooku, I see you're giving me more reason to interact with the Council than I've had in centuries. How underhanded." "I haven't officially joined the Council yet, in my defense," Dooku says, and helps Aura sink down as Fey goes to her knees on the foot of the ramp. "I simply accepted the offered seat, given that the responsibility seemed apt in the moment." Fey huffs, but she gently tips Aura's face up, touches gentle fingers to the bruises there. Aura's breath catches, and her eyes slide closed, something shaking through her skinny frame. "You feel so warm," she says. Fey smiles, brushing her bright hair. "And you feel as though you're in need of a little warmth, Padawan," she says gently. "How long did they have you?" Aura hesitates, long fingers curling in the sleeves of Nico's robe. Not long," she says. "My master, I think she gave me to them, because I was dark and too dangerous to train." Jaster goes still, eyes narrowing, and glances at Nico. Nico meets his eyes without wavering, and suddenly the fury in Nico and Dooku both makes far more sense. "I will look into matters," Dooku says, settling in the dirt beside Aura without any thought to his dignity. He keeps a hand on her shoulder, reassuring, grounding. "If that is what happened, Aura, she will be punished to the full extent of the Order's abilities. Even if she did not give you to them directly, I have many questions for her. You should never have been put in such a position to begin with, and given your master's abilities, she should have gone after you immediately. That she did not, and did not contact the Council, is entirely unforgivable." Aura's expression twists, and she lists sideways, buries her face in Dooku's robe. She's shaking, Jaster realizes grimly, and has to take a breath to contain his own anger. A pretty young girl, taken by pirates, He can imagine far too many terrible things she was subjected to, even if they only had her for a short time. "I'm dark, though," she says, and her fingers curl in Dooku's robe. "No one wants me as a Padawan. Master was my last chance to be a Jedi, and I don't want to leave the Order. Please, Master, I don't want to go back to Nar Shaddaa." "You will not be going anywhere, Aura," Dooku says firmly, and glances up at Faye. She holds his gaze for a moment, grim-faced, and he closes his eyes, pained, and wraps his arm more tightly around Aura. "I will take you as my own Padawan, and I have no doubt that with time and care, you will be a great Jedi. And even if you do not become a Jedi, there is a place in the Order for you. The Corps will take anyone, and those who are skilled with the Force are particularly needed, so you will never need to return to Nar Shaddaa if you do not want to." A sound shakes out of Aura, sharp, ragged, and she tucks her face into Dooku's robes, curls into him like she's going to fall apart. Dooku strokes her hair, holds her close as he murmurs reassurances. His expression is furious, grim, but it doesn't show in his voice or his hands. Neeko takes a long, careful breath, then steps back, giving Dooku, Aura, and Faye a little more privacy. Jaster follows with Miles behind him, and when Neeko comes to a stop at the edge of the landing area, Jaster gives him a long look, then says, "My lands are yours for as long as her recovery takes, Master Dyeth." Neeko sighs warily, rubbing his brow. "Thank you, Mandalore," he says quietly. "We will most certainly take you up on your offer. The Council will need to be informed, and an investigation launched." He pauses, then grimaces, glancing up. "This will be a great mess, particularly given the Master involved. One of her Padawans sits on the Council, and he has nothing but glowing things to say about her. It's kept the more unsavory whispers from growing any louder until now." Jaster considers his expression, the look in his eyes, and folds his arms across his chest. "You aren't surprised," he says. "Those whispers, you believed them." Neeko's smile is bare and crooked, self-recriminating. "I thought the odds that they had merit were high," he allows, "but I wasn't able to come up with proof or anyone who would speak against her, so I turned my attention to other things and hoped they were simply rumors. Finding proof in the form of Aura's plight was the worst possible outcome." It's an understandable thing to cling to hope in the face of such rumors, and Jaster grimaces, glancing back. Aura is crying again, he thinks, and looks away. It's not something for strangers. "I hadn't thought an order of empaths would have such troubles," he says grimly. Neeko sighs, grim and tired. "There are monsters hiding everywhere," he says, "particularly among those who believe they are on a righteous path that requires sacrifice. Aura's master will likely have a dozen excuses ready to defend her actions and claim the will of the Force in all of it. I think she would even believe it of herself. Between Dooku, Faye, and myself, though, I believe we can make a strong enough case to get past even Master Mundi's support of her." Jaster nods, accepting that. Given Tor's existence, given what happened to Arla, he can hardly throw stones at the Jedi. Mandalorians have a long history of taking in war orphans, but many times those orphans are ones they themselves created, and abuse is hardly unheard of. "Whatever help I can provide, I will," he promises. "There is an envoy from the Jedi Council on his way here to speak with me about the wedding. That may offer you an opportunity." Neeko frowns, tilting his head. "A council member?" he asks. "I have no idea," Jaster says. "I have no accounting of your council membership. He gave his name as Mace Windu, though." With a huff, Neeko shakes his head. "Not a council member," he says. "A precocious firebrand, and incredibly skilled, from what I know of him. A close friend trained him, and Slicelyn Mir has a talent for turning angry young children into the beating heart of the Order, all righteous wrath and drive." His smile takes on a grim slant. Aura could have used a master like her. Righteous drive sounds like a good descriptor of Windu, in the glimpse Jaster got of him. He hums, then tells Miles, "Have a room prepared for Master Dooku and his Padawan." A pause, and he slants a glance at Neeko. "Shall I assume you'll be sharing that room, Master Dyeth?" Nico looks wholly unimpressed by the implication. Dooku is liable to say precisely the wrong thing without me there to babysit, so yes, he says, droll. Better I help now than try to pick up the pieces later. Though perhaps this will help with Dooku's views on appropriate training methods for children. He casts a glance back at Aura and Dooku, then sighs, bows briefly to Jaster, then says, If you'll excuse me, Mandalore. Jaster watches as he heads back towards the trio by the ship, then turns away. Miles falls into step with him, quiet as he considers something, and as they make their way back up towards the wall, the compound beyond, Miles says quietly, She flinches a lot, more than I would expect if the pirates only had her for a short while. Jaster breathes in, breathes out. I heard, he says, equally quiet, John mention his old master taking a new Padawan when he was on a comm to Master Dyeth. A Paladuvan girl, he said. It wasn't him John was flinching away from. John had said that clearly, and Jaster believes him. Memories, instead, the same way Arla keeps herself wrapped up in armor to hold the memory of what Tor did to her at bay. And rumors of abuse, but nothing substantial. A Padawan girl either given over to or left with pirates. A Jedi Knight who flinches at quick movements outside of combat, who looked like he was deathly afraid when Jaster suggested inviting his former master to the wedding. The picture is far too clear, and Jaster doesn't like a single piece of it. He curls his hands into fists, breathes out through his nose. Soon, he tells himself. Soon, John will be back, and then Jaster is going to wrap him up in his arms and not let go until the world makes him. End of chapter 26.